This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
AgriTalk it is, 25 minutes to the hour, 12 o'clock every Thursday, bringing you things that have to do with the life of farmers across the various spaces that we can find them. It is this partnership between Power 98.7 and Agricultural Research Council. This morning, we are going to talk about something that gives me a significant tongue twist, but at the heart of it, we are just going to talk about research that's done in the field of, vaccines, diagnostics. Then we are looking at the, because we've been, of course, over the weeks looking at various campuses that are there. This morning, we're looking at the Onderstepoort Veterinary Research Campus. I've actually been there. It's classified as a national key point. It's so difficult just entering inside there. I am joined on the line by Dr. Norma Gcebe. Good morning to you, and how are you?
Good morning, Lukona. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Dr. Gcebe is researcher and head of Bacterial Molecular Diagnostic Laboratory at the ARC. And then I also have Dr. Ashad Matha. Dr. Matha, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning to you too, Lukona.
I hope you are good as well.
Yes, doing well, thank you.
Fantastic. Dr. Matha, of course, is senior researcher and research team manager for the Vaccine and Diagnostic Development Program. Perhaps, Dr. Gcebe, let me start off with you. This campus has a long, long history, founded in 1908, in actual fact, and has been playing in the national and international space in terms of veterinary excellence. And it is almost a flagship campus of the ARC and plays an important role in maintaining the health of our national herd and wildlife. Just tell us a bit about the work that you do there at that prized national key point.
Thank you, Lukona. Here at Onderstepoort, I'm from the Diagnostic Services Program, Bacteriology Section. We mainly do research, bacterial research. There's also another section for viruses as well as for parasitology. The Diagnostic Services Unit offers diagnostic services for foodborne pathogens, for animal diseases, bacterial diseases, as well as for viral diseases, as well as research. That's mainly what we do. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Dr. Martha, of course, you are also, manager of the research team for the Vaccine and Diagnostic Development Program. This is an important one. I think the latest one, Rift Valley flu, some of the things that you are dealing with, and vaccines were running out in the country and everybody was running to your campus for assistance. Just give us a sense what the work of the Vaccine and Diagnostic Development Program is all about.
Okay, so we are one of the units within the OVR, and we specifically concentrate on the improvement of current products on the market. So we would look at new product development, specifically vaccines and diagnostic products. But we also support some of the other units in the division, the diagnostic units, the parasitology units, with regards to troubleshooting when they have problems on the diagnostic kits, wherever we can help, specifically our virology section also. So that's our key role here at OVR, is support and new product development. So, any particular disease, when we identify specific risks to the agricultural sector, we get involved and try to initiate projects where we can try to address and mitigate those risks to our national herds.
Perhaps let's talk about how this relates to, ordinary people, smallholder farmers that, are looking for services, or people in communities that want to learn more about the dosing programs that they can get into, whether they're keeping a herd of cattle, sheep, and so on. Dr. Martha, how do you assist people practically? As you say, it also has to do with improving improvements with others on the market, sometimes you keep on injecting your animals and you feel that the injection is just no longer working anymore.
So we work closely with a unit called the Epidemiology and Training Unit, and that's where we would go out and reach out to small-scale livestock farmers. We give inputs with regards to dosing schedules, vaccine schedules. Some of our activities that we've done specifically was we've released a manual on caring for cattle, typical diseases that farmers should look out for, etc. We've also got our telephone line where if farmers contact us, they'll put them in contact with directly with the researchers involved in specific diseases. So the expertise we have is usually would be housed with a specific researcher. You know, you'd have a researcher, an expert in lumpy skin disease or Ruff Valley fever or African swine fever, and these are the people that day-to-day basis working with development of new products, identifying of risks associated, looking at the epidemiology or the spread of the disease. And so the small-scale farmers would be then put into touch with them, thereby then advising them what to do next. So we do not play in the space of directly manufacturing vaccines. That's our partner company, one of the other state-owned enterprises, and that is Honor Support Biological Products, and they'd be the ones who would then sell you the vaccines. We'd be doing the product improvement and advice to farmers on what to give, where to give, or what new products to look out for and how they will differ from the current products on the market.
Okay, thank you very much. Dr. Qebe, I suppose one is interested to know the role that, you know, diagnostics play in animal-human disease control, animal health, food and safety, and security. Where do you intersect in terms of the work that you do, the work that Dr. Martha do, the work that epidemiologists, some people will only think that epidemiologists come in when we talk about COVID-19, and yet they come in too when we talk about animals?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Connor. Yes, to answer that, I'll start with food security. Remember, we need healthy production animals in this country in order to contribute to food security. To have healthy animals, you also need to control the spread of diseases between animals themselves as well as between animals and humans. Mm. And one cannot control a disease that they don't know exists. Like, for instance, you talk about the case of COVID. We did not know that COVID-19 exists in humans.
Yep.
We had to diagnose it for us to control it. That applies to animals as well. We need to control diseases, you need to diagnose them. So our unit of diagnostic services, we offer diagnostic services for different diseases to contribute to control strategies. And control strategies in this country, depending on diseases, they include, among others,
yes,
to diagnose and slaughter or cut or diagnose and treat quarantine. We now know about quarantine from COVID, or diagnose and treat. That's where we come in with the diagnostic unit.
Well, in fact, Dr. Qebe, I think you taught us about quarantine when we were dealing with the foot and mouth disease, because auctions were actually suspended and farmers were encouraged not to, you know, get their heads to mix and all of that. So that also plays an important role in your space too.
Yes.
Dr. Qebe, I wonder though, I mean, one of the things where diagnostics, play a role is the idea of surveillance. Is there any surveillance that you do to pick up things that you are not within your radar, just to always be taking samples to check if, you know, herds and wildlife are well cared for and that there isn't any, outbreak of new bacterial infections that we have not picked up in the past?
Yes, Lukona, we do contribute to surveillance, but that role is mainly the role of the state. The state has a list of controlled diseases, which they monitor yearly. Diseases like TB, diseases like brucellosis, those diseases the state monitors yearly, and they send samples to us, and we test for the state. So that's our role in surveillance and monitoring.
And then, Dr. Martha, of course, You know, the idea of preventing diseases is a very important one. But at times we, you know, get into farming, you are not even so sure what are the prevalent diseases in your particular area. I mean, I know we buy sheep in one part of the Eastern Cape and you ask the farmer, how do I control for ticks if you're buying lambs? Says, well, we don't have a problem of ticks here, so I'm not so sure. And then you really almost do as touch as you go, and even some people giving advice will give you different advice. Where is the go-to authority when you are looking at those things of vaccination, you know, programs, dosing programs? Where should people go to for authority?
So the ARC works very closely with our national department, the Department of Veterinary Services from the Department of Agriculture. So your go-to person would definitely be your state vet in your area. So any information that we gather with regards to our national programs, collaborative programs that we have, this information is passed then to the Department of Forestry and Fisheries, and that is then imparted to the state vets. Mm-hmm. So your first port of call would be your state vets. They would then advise you what to look out for in your area, because as we know, you know, vaccines can get expensive, and there's just so many on the market, and you're right in saying, you know, the farmer needs to make the choice. What is the priority for me in this area? And that would be the place to go. It's really your state vet, because he knows the area. He knows the disease outbreaks based on information that we feed him together with other national bodies in the country. And so he will advise you correctly that, yes, if you're looking at your money that you have, go for this one. This is the most critical for you.
I suppose, Dr. Martha, the other part is, you know, we are also seeing an emergence of vaccines that are trying to be a 3-in-1, 5-in-1, where you use one injection to vaccinate against a number of issues. But some people still swear by, you know, get what is specialized for the strain of whatever, prevalent disease in a particular area. What is your advice on that in terms of the vaccine mix that is out there in the market?
So that is the one of the important roles that we play, is really to bring down that cost of vaccines. You know, as an example, one of the projects we looked at was farmers, they do not vaccinate against Rift Valley fever, primarily because it's a disease that has a seasonal pattern.
Yes.
For a period of, 5 to 10 years, you don't see it around, and farmers tend to forget that Rift Valley fever still exists in the environment. But they may be vaccinating against lumpy skin because it's prevalent. You know, neighboring farms, you have outbreaks. So they're willing to vaccinate against lumpy skin. So some of the projects we look at is, can we then combine these vaccines? And not at the level of mixing the bottles, because at that level you have interactions and you have one competing with the other in your vial itself. But we're looking at it at combining them at a molecular level. So what I'm saying is, you know, you give a single shot of vaccine, and because farmers are aware of lumpy skin and they're practicing the vaccination against lumpy skin, you will then start building protection against Rift Valley fever in the single shot of vaccine, thereby bringing down the costs and all the challenges related with giving vaccines. You know, the call-out fee for a vet, the handling of animals, you know, in crush pens, that's also very challenging. You know, you got to immobilize them. Also, the multi-dosing vaccines, you know, those that you have to give a booster shot. So we try to improve those vaccines. So you don't have to do once and call your vet out again and bring your animals to a kraal at a specific time of the day and handle them. And there's costs associated with that, you know. So again, one vaccine that can offer protection, you know, improve the duration of immunity. Some vaccines only protect for a year. You need to vaccinate annually. We look at how are there ways that we can improve that with new products, or improving the current products where you give a vaccine maybe every 2 years or 3 years, you know. Mm. And those are some of the things that we would look at here.
And I wonder, I mean, you're talking about the cost of bringing out a vet. So most people would much rather, you know, they go to the stores and they, you know, stock up their own vaccines and go administer them themselves. But there is a problem in terms of handling. Dr. Martha, if you're looking at, I mean, the instructions, some will be intramuscular, injections, some will be subcutaneous. What is the risk of not doing or administering the vaccines properly as per the instructions?
So this is one of the critical factors, you know, and the most important one for me personally is the storage of vaccines.
Yes.
So very often, you know, farmers would use a vaccine and they say, well, the vaccine is not working, or the animal got really sick after I gave the vaccine.
Mm.
And we need to then look, was that cold chain maintained? You know, was it stored correctly? You know,
from the shop to the fridge or
correct,
something.
From the fridge, you know, are we putting them in a cooler box with ice packs and then transporting these back onto the farm? Are we kept in a fridge that is monitored, you know, with all our power failures that we have?
Yes.
You know, is there periods when that fridge was thawing out for a day or two, you know? And we need to look at that because a lot of these vaccines, they are not stable at room temperatures, and they need to be kept cold.
Mm.
They can, you know, you can make them more virulent when it comes to attenuated strains of the vaccine,
mm-hmm.
or you can destroy them completely. Then you get in vaccines which are not efficacious. They're not working when you give
yes.
them because you did not maintain them at correct temperatures. So I think that's one of the really important things that farmers need to get around their mind, that it's really important to make sure that you follow that instruction on how to maintain or keep those vaccines.
Mm.
And that is also some of the projects that we would look at. How can we improve the stability of those vaccines? So a vaccine that you need to keep at 4 degrees, because again, they, you know, it's all about cost. There's cost associated with a fridge and transporting it with ice packs from the co-op or wherever you're getting those vaccines from. So we'd look at what can we add to those vaccines or incorporate in our vaccines that will make them be able to tolerate temperatures, you know, keep them at room temperature, 20 degrees, 25 degrees, 15 degrees, you know, and that would then improve efficacy of these products because, you know, you're doing away with that rigid conditions that you require to handle them and store them.
And I suppose, I mean, it's important to deal with those costs. I remember when I came to your campus was because my father-in-law was looking for the Rift Valley fever vaccine and it had run out. And I think you were only rationing as well in the campus. You're selling not more than X amount of bottles per customer. But, you know, to get it to the Free State and you do same day courier, which has to get on a flight and all of that. I mean, the costs of handling that cold chain storage, Dr. Martha, is not always inexpensive, is it?
Correct, yeah. And I mean, you know, a nice example is what we're seeing now with the COVID situation. You know, people have heard words like the Pfizer vaccine must be kept at minus 70
yeah.
degrees, you know. So that's exactly the thing with vaccines. You know, a vaccine kept at minus 70 degrees, I mean, that's specialized equipment that you don't have everywhere. You know, so such a vaccine, you want to make sure that you can improve it to keep it maybe at 4 degrees, which is the fridge, or minus 20 degrees, which is your regular freezer in your house, you know. A minus 70 is a piece of equipment you only get at laboratories or at hospitals. It's a very specialized settings, you know. It's definitely so, and there's cost with it. Like I say, like you mentioned, you know, that couriers, if they have to get this stuff down to you on dry ice, you know,
yeah,
rather than just
absolutely.
An ice pack, which is four. there's a substantial cost implication with regards to that, you know.
Absolutely. People of Power, the line is 0861-987-000. My guest this morning, Dr. Noma Qebe, researcher and head of Bacterial Molecular Diagnostic Laboratory at the Agricultural Research Council, Dr. Ashad Martha, senior researcher and research team manager for the Vaccine and Diagnostic Development Program, talking all things vaccines for our animals, livestock, herds, and wildlife. We will take a short break, pay some bills, but you can pose some of your questions to them before we wrap up this conversation.
Speak up. Call the Power Line on 0861-987-000.
Indeed, please do. That is where you find us. I see Lorato on the line. Lorato, good morning.
Lucona, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Only a
and
pleasure.
To your guest. For sharing, you know, enlightening information. I know that, or at least as far as I've been listening, that your questions and the responses has been a lot around livestock, right?
Mm.
And I wanted to find out, with regards to domestic animals, and a lot of us keep dogs, and I see many other people keep other pets as well.
Yeah.
Is there a way of helping majority of people who ordinarily can't afford private veterinary vet services? Because I've observed that sometimes when there's an outbreak of some sort, and I've not really observed any with regards to domestic animals, but I'm just thinking if, for instance, there's a need for a vaccine program of some sort or vaccination of the domestic animals, I see a lot of people that I imagine they keep domestic animals, but they may actually not afford that. So it means that they are going to sit with these animals without vaccinating them because of the barrier that is caused. Lastly, are there a continuous public education program particularly on, you know, vaccinations for domestic animals. Thank you, Lukona.
Okay, thank you so much, Lorato. Dr. Tebe, perhaps let me come to you on that one. You mean domestic animals, pets, and so on?
Yes, thank you, Lukona. Thank you to the listener. In terms of diagnostics, we do have tests for domestic animals. It depends on the disease, but we do test. With regards to assisting, I think the state vet offices, they are doing a great job there. There are extension officers that are allocated for helping farmers. So I think if they contact the Department of Agriculture, they will be assisted. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Do I have somebody else on the line, perhaps? No, not really. Okay, Dr. Martha, any add-on to that question?
Yeah, so I think the other thing I would like to add is besides your state vets, also your NSPCA, National Prevention for the Cruelty to Animals, these people very often run programs where they'll go out to specific areas. I know the University of Pretoria also has an outreach program where you get your studying the vets who are still students together with under supervision are taken out into the field, you know, and they have these mobile clinics where they look at addressing some of these issues in domestic animals. What I think is important, the main one is rabies, you know, is really to look at vaccination against rabies. Yeah. Again, you know, it's sometimes made available freely by some of these organizations that I mentioned about, but if not, it's one of them that is quite critical that farmers think about, you know, and put money aside or yet to spend money to vaccinate their domestic animals, cats and dogs specifically against rabies.
Okay, I've got Khumutso, a quick one, we're out of time.
Quick one, Lukona, thank you very much. I just want to check with your guest, do they do gain of function, and is it something that they will support morally? Thank you.
Do they do
gain of function?
Okay.
Research? Yes.
All right. Let me just ask Dr. Martha or Dr. Tsebe, who goes for that one?
Can you give us more details?
Just expand a little.
Yeah.
All right. Gain of function is making animal viruses virulent into human beings.
Okay.
So no, we really wouldn't look at that. I mean, our key focus is really addressing diseases, right? Directly at looking at the viruses, which infect animals specifically, but sometimes they have this zoonotic function where they also infect humans, you know, things like brucellosis, things like Rift Valley fever, so both humans and animals can get sick. But we'll really look at the viruses themselves, and by gathering some information with regards to the function of the virus itself, we'll make a choice on which route should we go to develop this into a vaccine. Whether it be a live vaccine, you know, and that would be then how do we weaken it so it will still act as a vaccine but not make the animal sick when you give it, you know, that would be this attenuated vaccines, you know.
Okay.
Or do we go a safer route, which is the more rational design of vaccines based on subunits, you know, and again, to put it into context, like the COVID-19, you know, you hear the spike protein, you know,
yes.
So you're not taking the entire virus, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, but you're taking one of those proteins of that virus, and you're using that in your vaccine development, you know, either as in a vectored form or as a subunit. And those are pretty much the techniques that we would use here.
Okay.
So the animal vaccines themselves and how we can develop them or use them or make vaccines out of them.
Fantastic. Dr. Martha, Dr. Tsebe, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Lukona.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.